May it please the court, my name is Nancy Barron. I represent Louise S. Minton, who is the relator and petitioner in this application for a writ of mandamus directing the Honorable Ray Pettis to set aside and vacate his order, removing and suspending Mr. Minton from his office as County Commissioner of Precinct 4 of Maverick County, Texas. The facts which give rise to this action occurred primarily back in 1987 and 1988. Prior to that, back in 1986, Louise Minton ran for the office of County Commissioner of Precinct 4 in Maverick County. He was elected in the general election back in November 1986, and took that office in January of 1987. Subsequently, in January of 1988, he was indicted with two other individuals for the offense of conspiracy to commit bribery. He was tried for that offense in July of 1988 and found guilty by a Pettit jury in Webb County, Texas. He was sentenced by Judge Pettis. The sentencing proceeding occurred in August of 1988. At the sentencing proceeding, Judge Pettis specifically found as factual matters that all of the acts which served as the basis of Mr. Minton's conviction occurred prior to his re-election to county office. Nevertheless, Judge Pettis entered and made a part of the judgment in that case an order removing Commissioner Minton from county office and further suspending him from that office until during the pendency of his appeal. His appeal is presently pending. It has not been decided, and his conviction in terms of Texas law, as there's been no decision by the Fourth Court of Appeals, is not yet final. Specifically, Mr. Minton relies on Section 87.001 of the Texas Local Government Code, which provides that an officer may not be removed under this chapter for an act the officer committed before election to office. It's our position in this case that the plain and unambiguous statutory language compels this court's conclusion that Commissioner Minton should be restored to his office, as all of the acts, and I don't believe there's any dispute as to this, occurred prior to his re-election to county office.
How about 8731?
8731, of course, provides for the immediate removal of any county officer who's been found guilty of a felony offense. The way I believe that the statute is structured, Your Honor, is this, is 87.001, I believe, is very specific, and it says an officer may not be removed under this chapter, and that would seem to apply to the chapter as a whole and not to any particular subchapter. It is divided into subchapters throughout Chapter 87, and therefore there is no qualifying or limiting language within the statute itself, and therefore it would appear to me the mandatory terms of the statute compel his reinstatement to county office, which to this date, I might add, has gone unfilled, and the citizens of Precinct 4 in Maverick County have been without representation since September of 1988.
But if you read 8701 that way, you just have to disregard 8703.
I don't think so, Your Honor. I think that clearly, if the county officer were to commit criminal acts while in county office.
He did.
No, Your Honor.
According to the jury.
No. His conviction occurred while he was in county office, but the acts which served as the basis for that conviction occurred prior to his election to office. In other words, the acts complained of occurred in 1985.
He was a private citizen in 1985?
He was holding the office of County Commissioner of Precinct 4 of Maverick County. He was subsequently, in 1986, re-elected to that office and then took that office in January of 1987.
Well, but he was serving as a commissioner at the time.
That is correct,
that
Your Honor.
The action occurred.
That is correct.
Well, then back to my question. If you read 87001 as requiring that statement, you just have to disregard 87031.
I don't believe so, Your Honor. I think that what that would be a retroactive application. In other words, he can only be removed during the pendency of his office, and in this case, his office would his office he had been reelected to would run from January of 1987 till the end. He can only be removed from that office for acts committed during the term of that office, and I don't believe that the removal provision retroactively applies to permit removal for acts committed previous thereto.
I was under the impression that if the public knew that you were charged with a crime and they re-elect you, that is a forgiveness of the crime because they knew about it when they elected you. Was he indicted previous to the election?
Well, he was not indicted previously to the election. However, he was subpoenaed before a grand jury previous to the election, and the subject of the grand jury investigation, this happened in Eagle Pass, this was an investigation of some public notoriety. The subject matter of the grand jury investigation had been leaked to the newspaper, and that was adduced at the criminal trial. It is not a part of this record. I could submit it through a supplemental exhibit, but certainly the acts and the environment and the criminal conduct which ultimately resulted in an indictment was well known in the community of Eagle Pass, and Commissioner Minton's appearance before the grand jury was known. But I would like to address the forgiveness doctrine. I've read the cases. There are unfortunately very few of them, and I don't think any of them are really clearly dispositive of what's going on in the removal statute, the best that I'm able to interpret it. The forgiveness doctrine, it seems to me, has never really been directly applied in the context of a statutory removal proceeding, such as the one in which Commissioner Minton was removed. That those cases in which the forgiveness doctrine has been applied are strictly judicial removal proceedings under the Constitution. Certainly some cases make the clear distinction between statutory removal proceedings in which Section 87.001 does apply and judicial removal proceedings in which it does not apply. And the cases, they're Bates, Brown, and Carrillo's, all specifically say that the prior act term, as it was enacted at that time, 59, I guess 86, does not apply to a judicial removal proceeding, but they would apply its spirit and therefore acts antedating a judge's election could be forgiven by the voters so long as those acts were not in themselves disqualifying under the law. I think that's a real confusing sort of test, and it's certainly, at least as far as I can tell, not been applied in the context of a statutory removal proceeding such as this. Additionally, and I do think that the respondents' briefs suggest that the forgiveness doctrine has somehow been engrafted into the statutory removal proceeding or somehow is impliedly a part of it. And I don't think, number one, that the plain language reveals that anywhere within the statute. And secondly, I think that if that were to be so, the practical aspects of its implementation would prove burdensome indeed. And what I would suggest to the court is this. In either the civil removal proceedings under the 87.0, I don't want to cite it and miscite it, but certainly there is a procedure whereby county officers can be civilly removed by petition and jury trial. And then there's additionally the automatic removal provision for as a result of a criminal conviction. Certainly if you examine the statutes, there's really no way under the specific terms of the statute for a jury to give effect to a forgiveness doctrine. If you examine subsection or section 87.018 in the civil removal portion, the law specifically provides that the judge is not permitted to submit any special issues to the jury. In the court's charge to the jury in the context of a civil removal proceeding, the jury is to be instructed that they are either to find that the acts are true or they are not. And so, certainly in the context of a civil case, there is no way for a jury to say that the acts were known and have been forgiven. That applies equally in the context of a criminal case. Certainly, issues of public knowledge and forgiveness are not issues which are relevant to the trial of criminal matters and probably, and most, in my opinion, most certainly, would be inadmissible in the context of a criminal proceeding. And therefore, there's really no way for there to be a factual finding on the issue of forgiveness in the lower courts. What that does, in effect, is make appellate courts a fact-finding body. And I think, essentially, that is what respondents are suggesting that this court do. They've submitted affidavits from the community and things of that sort, is that, that there seems to be no way to effectively litigate that issue below. And then the only way in order for a factual determination to be made would be to do it in the appellate process. And I think that that just makes the system cumbersome, and I think it really ignores what the removal statute is there to do. Essentially, and the cases do not discuss the public policy aspects, I think, as fully as perhaps they might. I direct the court's attention to Russell versus North, which I cited in my brief. And there I do believe the courts discussed in some length some of the policy considerations surrounding removal. Additionally, in the later McGinnis case, and I believe I've cited in the brief, in the dissenting opinion, one of the judges of this court talked about the policy aspects of leaving to the legislature any amendments to the statute, but certainly contemplating the right of the people to choose their own electors. The removal statute should not be, in my opinion, a substitute for other sanctions in the law. It is not a substitute for criminal penalties.
But how do you explain Article 16, Section 2 of the Constitution? Laws shall be made to exclude from office those who have been convicted of bribery.
I think that's entirely true, and I think that the laws which have been enacted to carry out that constitutional mandate, Your Honor, certainly the election code provides that a person who's been finally convicted is ineligible to hold office. In this case, Commissioner Minton has not been finally convicted because his appeal is still pending.
You mean if his conviction is affirmed by the fourth court and then the Court of Criminal Appeals refuses to grant their discretionary review,
then he would therefore be disqualified from office and a vacancy would result, and then it would be the power of the district judge to fill that vacancy. But
he'd still be entitled to his pay up until that time.
If he were not suspended, but in this case he has been suspended, and I think if you look also in the context of the removal statute itself, 87.032 says that even after conviction, a county officer may remain in office during the pendency of his appeal. His notice of appeal supersedes the removal order unless the district court makes a further finding that it is in the public interest that he be suspended. And so certainly both in the election code as to eligibility and in the removal statutes as to the ability to retain office following conviction, the legislature recognizes the distinction between a conviction and a final conviction. And so at least as of this date, Commissioner Minton is not ineligible or otherwise disqualified to hold county office.
What is the status of the criminal appeal?
The criminal appeal was argued this January of 1990. We have not heard anything, depending on the panel.
It's only taken a mere 4 years to get it argued in the Court of Appeals?
No, he was tried in September of 88. It's taken a mere
oh.
a mere 2 years, two and a half, year and a half.
He was indicted.
The district judge had the power to fill in vacancies?
I may be incorrect in that. I'm not totally up to speed on filling vacancies since it's never happened in this case. But finally, I would point out, I notice I have very little time left, that I do believe that this court has specifically applied the express provisions of 87.001 in the Talamantes case. That county commissioner was removed automatically as a result of his conviction for misconduct. In that case, as in this one, the commissioner's acts predated his election. This court issued a writ of mandamus, or at least indicated that it would do so if Judge Strauss did not restore Commissioner Talamantes to his office. Additionally, if this court would reread the McInnis case, in that case, apparently what happened is following the appeal from the Court of Appeal, the Court of Civil Appeals, this court reinstated or ordered that that the district attorney in that case should not be deprived of his office as a result of criminal acts which apparently had been committed in his prior term. That opinion was ultimately replaced with on a motion for rehearing, and it was resolved not on the basis of the removal statute, but on the basis of a subsequent statute for pertaining specifically to district and to district attorneys. It was on the basis of the new statute and not on the basis of the removal statute that this court found that Mr. McKinnis should be removed. Unless there are any additional questions, I believe.
Any questions? Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
The court is ready to hear argument from respondent.
May it please the court, Mr. Alberto Ramon and Mr. Rogelio Jr.
May it please the Honorable Supreme Court of the State of Texas, I'm Alberto M. Ramon. I'm the county attorney for Maverick County, Texas. Our county seat is Eagle Pass. Relator Minton was convicted of the felony offense of conspiracy to commit bribery. It would be a travesty of all the principles of law that protect the public interest to uphold this court's prior ruling in the Talamantes slip opinion and use that opinion to grant relators Minton's prayer to return to office while his felony appeal is pending in the court below. District Judge Ray Pettis ruling that relator Minton should be suspended from county office pending the appeal of the conviction should not be overturned by this court. Judge Pettis' decision was based on sound consideration of all of the evidence developed at the trial, and his decision is supported by well-established case, statutory, and constitutional authority. Without a doubt, Relator Minton and this Supreme Court in the Talamantes opinion misinterpreted or were misled by the codification of the Texas Legislative Council of the statutory precedents into Chapter 87 of the Local Government Code. The codification, however, cannot alter the substance of the law, contrary to relators' desires and the argument this morning. The Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals correctly ruled against Relator Minton. The Fourth Circuit was persuaded that the Texas Legislative Council did not intend to alter the sense, meaning, or effect of prior law relating to the removal of county officers convicted of felonies or misdemeanors involving official misconduct. I must respectfully urge this Honorable Supreme Court to deny relator's petition for writ of mandamus and simultaneously grant relief to the prosecutors of this state by overturning the Talamantes decision as well. Relator is attempting to overlook prior law on account of the unfortunate errors in the codification. Not only does the codification lead to confusion in the removal by felony conviction cases such as this, but it also made no provision for an immediate appointment by the district court of a replacement pending the resolution of the criminal appellate process. Again, since the codification cannot alter the sense, meaning, or effect of prior law, the district court below still retains the power to appoint a suitable person from Precinct 4 to the temporary vacancy created by the suspension of relator from the office of county commissioner. Hopefully, it has not been done. There is a confusion.
Continuing to draw his salary?
No, he has not. He has been suspended. County Judge Rudy Bowles was made a party respondent to this proceeding because of the fact that in response to an opinion of the then county attorney, Rolando Menchaca, he had Commissioner Minton removed from Commissioner's Court, acting again on the suspension order entered by Judge Pettis upon his finding that it was in the public interest that Commissioner Minton be removed and suspended from office pending the appeal.
What was the relationship of the county judge to the removal?
The county judge acted on the order of suspension entered by Judge Pettis suspending Commissioner Minton from office. Commissioner Minton attempted to, and did in fact, sit down at the court.
Well, in the sense that he didn't permit his participation.
Exactly. Exactly. And pursuant also to the opinion of the then county attorney, Orlando Menchaca, all of his pay and emoluments of office were suspended. They have been, since my assumption of the office of county attorney, been put into a trust account where they are being held, you know, pending the resolution of this matter. So hopefully this Supreme Court can give the district court some guidance, because he really is in a quandary as to whether he has the power to make an appointment.
The district judge.
The district judge, yes. There is a language in Chapter 87 giving the county judge authority to appoint county officers when a vacancy is created. But that usually is in cases of death and in cases when someone resigns, for example. This is a very special situation where the suspension comes after the trial of a felony matter, and the prior law was that the district judge had the authority to appoint the replacement immediately.
What is the problem or the barrier to appointing a temporary commissioner to represent the citizens of the precinct court?
Well, the recodification by the Texas Legislative Council made no provision. It left a gap. So it's not clear whether the district court, if you just look at the codification as it stands. Since then, of course, we've been looking into this matter more fully, and it is our opinion that the Texas Legislative Council either did not intend to alter prior law, or if they did, they had no authority to do so.
Well, who's supervising Precinct 4 and the roads and the duties of the commissioner and the employees of Precinct 4?
The other commissioners and the county judge are seeing to that. Of course, we're not a very big county, and so that has not been a problem. It is a serious problem, and in fact, I made an attempt to intervene in the court below in San Antonio to get that position filled. Again, because of the problem that there was confusion as to whether the district judge in fact had authority to make an appointment. So we do need some guidance from this court and ancillary to the disposition of this petition for writ of mandamus as to whether the judge in fact has authority to appoint someone immediately and maybe has a duty to do so if the petition for writ of mandamus is denied. In any event, what we have here is what I describe as a situation of civil sheep and criminal goats. Civil sheep are those officers that are brought before the district court on a petition in a civil proceeding. Now, those civil proceedings are civil and quasi-penal in nature, because you have an office that is at stake. In those proceedings, the district court immediately suspends the officer and appoints a replacement. And most of those cases involve situations where the officer is either incompetent or derelict in his duties, drunk, maybe just old and can't do it. Whatever reason. So those are situations where the officer comes under the forgiveness doctrine. Those situations are quote forgivable by the electorate, and thus he can come back into office. So he cannot be, if he's reelected, he cannot be removed from that office on account of prior acts that were not disqualifying in themselves. By that we mean felonious. Now, when we have...
Mr. Mitten makes the argument, though her lawyer on his behalf, is that the voters have forgiven him because the voters were aware that he had been under indictment and subpoenaed and allegations had been made and the voters were aware of it and he was forgiven by the voters because he got reelected.
Well, that's really a factual dispute because I have two very reliable affidavits of clients, you know, that live in prison forward, had no knowledge of it, and they're very involved in the political process. And I'm sure the court is aware of a lot of, sometimes we do have leaks in grand jury proceedings, but this was not the case.
Your position is not even voters can forgive sin.
Correct. Correct. Not felonious sin. In any event, the criminal votes are those that are brought in by indictment, or tried and convicted. And then at that point, that convicted felon still has the benefit of the district judge making an exercise, undergoing an exercise of his discretion, decide whether he should be suspended or not. The appeal supersedes the judgment, and so automatically he still remains in office unless he makes a special finding that it is in the best interest to suspend him from office, which was the case here.
Mr. Carboni, are you going to leave some time for Mr. Munoz?
Excuse me?
Are you going to leave some time for your co-counsel?
Yes, sir, I will. I hear you got very involved. Thank you.
Drove up here from Uvalde. I want to at least have the opportunity. I generally practice on the criminal side, and this may be my only chance. My name is Rogelio Munoz. I'm the district attorney for Uvalde, and I think it's so important that the court make a proper decision in this case. And the court was asking a little while ago about why hasn't the court or the judge gone ahead and appointed someone, and they haven't done so because of the uncertainties created by this case. Because if the court ultimately decides that the court didn't have the power to remove him and it had gone ahead and appointed someone, you were going to have a situation where the people were going to have to pay two commissioners. Pay Mr. Minton for the time that he was wrongfully removed and then pay the other fellow for sitting there when he wasn't supposed to. So I think it's important that the court make a decision in this case.
But isn't that the law, though, anyway?
Sir?
Isn't that the law?
About whether or not he should appoint?
If someone is removed and then they find later that he should not have been removed and a salary has been paid, then isn't that the law?
Yes, sir, that is the law. Yes, that is the law.
Really, they haven't been appointed not because of the law is the problem, it's just the reluctance to possibly expose the taxpayers to two liabilities.
That's right. That's exactly what happened, is the court, being unsure, I'm just saying that maybe that's why the court hasn't done it. At any rate, what we've got here is whether or not, and we talked about the policy of the state of Texas and whether or not it's been discussed. I think the policy of the state of Texas, at least as it's set out in the Constitution, is that we shall remove these individuals and that law shall be made to remove them from office if they're convicted of bribery or some high crime. And what 87-0031 is doing is trying to give effect to that constitutional provision that mandates the legislature to do so.
And the waiver says that only applies to final convictions, and this is not final.
Well, if 87-031, as the legislature attempts to implement the constitutional provision, says that once a person has been convicted by a jury, he shall be removed. Now, 87031 takes into consideration and says, okay, if the person appeals, the judge may say, okay, I'm not going to remove you unless the court finds, based on what has been presented and based on what he knows about what took place and the nature of the offense, unless the court makes a specific finding that it's in the best interest of the people of that community to so remove him.
So your position basically is that Article 16, Section 2, which says laws shall be made,
yes,
does not say final or conviction pending appeal. That's for the legislature to decide, and they decided it in 87.0031.
That's right. And because it's a public policy that we've got, that if you have an individual that has engaged in this conduct and a jury of 12 people have decided beyond a reasonable doubt that he's done so, then we should have an opportunity to get rid of these individuals. Now, it's within the court's discretion to say, okay, it's not such a bad situation. Maybe I'm going to not remove you and allow you to serve unless the court makes... So there's a protection in there for that type of situation where the court may not want to remove him. But when you have an individual that's convicted of bribery, the worst type of abuse of the public trust, then I think the court did the right thing and went ahead and said, I'm going to do what 87031 requires and mandates me to do, is remove him. And if the question was raised earlier, well, what if the conviction is affirmed? Can we come back and remove him? No. Because if you interpret 87001 as they are requesting that you interpret it, we can't do that because the acts that he committed and that he's finally been convicted of occurred before his election. So if the Court of Civil Appeals come back and affirms it, and the Court of Criminal Appeals also finds that it's a final conviction, we can't remove him. He is a person who cannot vote. He is a person who could not hold the office or run for office here, convicted, finally, of bribery, sitting in that office against every public policy. She says that the cases have not talked about this. If we go back to 1941, where there was a county attorney who stole some money, and back then I think he was arguing, well, I can't be prosecuted because I stole the money before I was elected. And the Court of Criminal Appeals in that case says, that's a monstrous proposition for someone to come in here and say that it matters when you committed this heinous crime. Should make any difference. The fact is you've been convicted and you've done it, and we can't have you there. And the public policy and the public interest require that that person be removed and that we have some mechanism to do it.
Can you reconcile our decision in Calamontes with your position, or do we need to overrule that?
You need to overrule it. You need to say, and this whole thing came about because of recodification. Before, we didn't have that problem. But the recodification put language in there and said, no person shall be removed under this chapter. And in that same chapter is 87031. That removed under this chapter language was not included in the original 5968. So that is what has caused us the problem. And as we pointed out in the various briefs that have been filed, the Legislative Council doesn't have the right or the authority to change the law. And by their language, it has given them, the realtor in this case, the ability, the ammunition to come before this court and gave this court, or gave the other fellow in the Talamantes case, you look at 87001 and says, well, you can't remove him. But if you look at it again, you say, we have to remove him, because that's what the law is, after all. Thank you all very much.
Any questions? Thank you, Counsel.
I have just a few remarks in rebuttal. I wouldn't want this court to misconstrue anything that I might have said. I think that what Mr. Munoz has argued is something we wholeheartedly disagree with. Number one, Mr. Munoz has suggested to the court that if the Fourth Court of Appeals were to affirm Commissioner Minton's conviction, that the county would not be able to remove him. I think that what would occur in that case is that the conviction would then be final, I suppose, if PDR was refused or granted and we lost. But the conviction would then be final.
But just on that small point, okay, it wouldn't be really until the Court of Criminal Appeals and perhaps even the U.S. Supreme Court had an opportunity to rule.
Well, yes, theoretically, that's true.
But under your forgiveness doctrine, you're saying it doesn't matter because the offenses of which he was convicted occurred before his election, so that he can just...
No, and I'd like to make two points on that, if I could, Your Honor.
Say that.
I think it's very complicated and confusing, and number one, a final conviction would act as a disqualification from holding office, and therefore removal would essentially be a moot issue, that he would be disqualified from serving in that office. And so,
does that automatically vacate the office?
Well,
or you've got to do something to get it vacated.
Well, I don't know about that. I really don't know about that, Your Honor. I would suspect that I really don't know. I think that I really don't know how that would work procedurally. But secondly, and
are you saying that forgiveness doesn't apply to disqualification?
Correct. That is what I'm saying, Your Honor, and I do think that's what the cases hold. And
what does it apply to then?
It applies to acts, and what the language in N. Ray Laughlin specifically says is that the forgiveness doctrine applies to acts which are not in themselves disqualifying. And that's discussed.
Yeah, it would apply to acts that you haven't been finally convicted for then, doesn't it?
Well, I suppose, perhaps it does. I don't know.
Or it applies to acts that nobody's accused you with a complaint.
I think it would apply more specifically to acts of misconduct or misfeasance in office which did not arise to the level of criminal conduct or was not pursued in a criminal manner.
Well, that's true of everybody that runs for office.
I believe it is, Your Honor.
When you run for office and everybody finds out about all the things that you've done and they go ahead and elect you, then your doctrine of forgiveness, that applies to everyone. But
we're
talking about a case where someone has been formally charged, indicted, convicted by jury. And you're saying that forgiveness applies there?
No, Your Honor, I'm not saying that forgiveness applies.
It applies up until the point then that there is a final conviction when the other statute goes into effect.
That may be one way to look at it. I suppose the way that I would look at it, Your Honor, and I would suggest is that certain acts, criminal conduct or acts which are ultimately may result in a final conviction or which may ultimately be disqualifying in and of themselves cannot be forgiven. I would direct the court's attention to the state ex rel, I think it's Russell versus North, I may have, that's correct. And they discuss that in there, and I would just like to quote briefly from that, and it was cited with approval by this court in the dissenting opinion in McInnes, which is not exactly on point, but the law there says that in revising Article 5986, the legislature used plain and simple words to direct that no state officer shall be removed from office for acts committed prior to his election. The direction is unqualified. The presumption then is that the legislature intended the reenactment to apply as it had been judicially construed in prior cases. This opinion also says that the forgiveness doctrine does not apply to acts which are in themselves disqualifying. Clearly, if there's a problem here, it would seem to me the problem is with the statute, and that if there's to be a remedy here, the remedy should be through the legislature. I think that this was mentioned by the dissenting judge in McInnes, and in there I'd like to quote briefly, "Unlike the cases to remove district judges, this case is a statutory removal proceeding to which Article 5986 applies. On its face, Article 5986 does not contain the limitations of the judicial forgiveness doctrine, such as the requirement of public knowledge. Although the public interest might be better served by the addition of the forgiveness principles to Article 5986, amendment of the statute is the function of the legislature and not the judiciary." And if I could just try to add some sense to this inquiry, and I do believe that it is intellectually problematic, it seems to me that a person can be an official or an officer, can be removed from office only for conduct which is committed in the office. That the violation of the public trust in office is the officer's actions in office. And if a person is committed...
Well, that's exactly what happened here, except there was a different term. And you say that because it happened in a different term, it makes a difference.
Well, this court's cases have found that to be so. It specifically, and I think the Reeves case finds that the prior term doctrine embodied in 87.001 under the statute that applied at that time applies to re-election as well. And so I don't think there can be any reasonable dispute that certainly under the cases of this court that the prior term doctrine, or 87.001, does indeed apply where an officer has been reelected.
Let me ask you a little bit about final conviction. You pointed out it was state law. Under federal law, final conviction is different.
That's correct.
Yeah, this court, maybe 3 years ago, changed our doctrine of what a final judgment was in a civil case to conform to the federal policy.
As laws are doing, I agree.
As res judicata now applies, as soon as it's a final judgment in the trial court. Do you have a citation from the Court of Criminal Appeals recently that shows they still firmly adhere to the doctrine?
No, but I would be happy to present it in supplemental letter brief to the court or something like that.
Well, that seems to be kind of the linchpin of one of the linchpins of your argument.
Well, I certainly think that it's crucial in terms of determining whether disqualification is involved, but I certainly think just directing the court's attention back to the removal statutes itself is certainly the legislature contemplated that an officer could remain in county office despite a conviction by simply filing a notice of appeal. That is what the removal law provides.
Even if your client is eventually, if all appeals are unsuccessful and eventually removed for office, your contention he's entitled to back pay up until the day.
No, I am not contending that. I think he is entitled to back pay if and only if his conviction is, well, if he were restored to office pursuant to mandamus, or if his conviction were reversed and he were committed a new trial, or else it was reversed for insufficient evidence, which is one of the points on appeal. In other words, if he were to retake county office, I believe he would be entitled to back pay.
Well, I don't quite understand. You say that he's not entitled to pay because he's been suspended, but he's not supposed to be suspended. He shouldn't have been suspended, and it's a wrongful suspension, because you say he shouldn't be removed from office until the conviction is final.
Correct.
Well, if he shouldn't have been suspended, should he be entitled to back pay?
Well, I suppose I need some sort of opinion from a court upon which to base that. I would say theoretically, yes, but unless he is restored to office through some order of the court, or through being successful in his appeal, then I don't think as a practical matter that payment can be had. I mean, theoretically, yes. If he should not have been suspended, then of course he should be paid.
But you're saying if you win here, part of the order should be back up.
Well, I think that if we were to prevail in this case, and if this court were to find, as it did in Talamantes, that he could not be removed and suspended for acts that he may have committed prior to office, then he is entitled to back pay, because that should
naturally follow.
Correct. I'm just blind. Right, exactly. I mean, that the order would say that he shouldn't have been removed as early as August of 1988, and therefore he's entitled to the emoluments of the office, of which he has been deprived since that day.
But had the situation been a little bit different, had the acts occurred and the conviction occurred all during the same term?
Correct.
And the action the court said would have been proper?
Absolutely proper. Absolutely. We would have no complaint in this court, Your Honor. It's under the rather unique facts of this case that we believe that we are entitled to the application of the express and unqualified terms of the removal statute, and that any deficiency or disagreement with the statute or its inherent policies is more properly a matter for the legislature and not a matter for judicial construction.
Any other questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
That concludes the arguments in the second call. The court will take another recess.